Welcome to RightsRadio.com. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr. I'm the author of Defend Your Condo and Homeowner Rights, documenting my two-year struggle and victory in a landmark case dealing with pets in condos. To learn more, visit my publishing website at starpublications.com. That's star with two R's, publications with an S, starpublications.com. I also offer telephone consultations on condo board, HOA board, and related homeowner association rights problems. Our topic today, the National Pet Food False Advertising Case. A nationwide class action lawsuit was launched in 2007 against leading pet food manufacturers and distributors for negligently and intentionally misleading the public about the actual content of commercial pet food. The lawsuit alleges that major national pet food manufacturers, marketers, and distributors advertise and promote their products as premium, complete, and balanced, and other misleading slogans, even though their food products actually contain such items as euthanized dogs and cats, restaurant grease, hair, hooves, and diseased animals, along with other inedible garbage. Our guest is Catherine J. McIver, a partner at the Maltzman Foreman Law Firm, and she's the co-lead counsel in this case. Catherine works tirelessly, often 24 hours at a stretch, to give guilty pet food companies their just rewards. She also possesses substantial expertise in complex litigation, and to learn more, please visit my website at rightsradio.com and read about Catherine, and she's also going to give you details on her website and contact information. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a delight to have you. And, Catherine, I know you cannot go into the details of an ongoing case, but you've been kind enough to agree to share your experiences and your views regarding pet food with us today. And so we're delighted to have this opportunity to learn so much more.
Yeah, I think it's very important for people to understand what they're feeding their pets.
Absolutely. And I'd like to begin by asking you, what did you find problematic about pet food at the outset, and why was it so important to you to move into this arena?
Well, I can't go into the attorney-client part of it, but I can tell you from my perspective, this lawsuit is important to me. I've got a long history of animal rescue, although albeit I've had less time to do it once I became a lawyer, but I still do it occasionally. And I've lost two pets due to diabetes, two cats. And I had always asked doctors, what can I feed them, or am I doing something wrong with the feeding that causes cats to have diabetes? And each time I had asked that, I had been told, no, what you're feeding them is fine, which was dry cat food, and keep doing what you're doing. Of course, I found that frustrating because, two cats dying of diabetes, one after the other, one was only 10 and another was 12, when, you know, cats can live up to 20 years. That was disappointing. So once I started researching, it really came about during the Menu Foods recall, which assuming your viewers knew about that. Everyone else did. And I started doing research as to what food was appropriate at that time because it was a very scary time. I started getting contacted by people who were very, very afraid of what was going on, and the research went from there.
Diabetes, is that a common problem for cats?
Yes, from what I have read and when I was doing the research, it's obesity and diabetes is of epidemic proportions now.
In cats and dogs, or primarily cats?
Obesity in dogs. I'm not sure about the diabetes in dogs because dogs are a little bit different than cats in what their needs are. But what I found out about cats and why dry food is so bad for cats, that's why if any of your listeners have cats, this is important, is that cats are supposed to be carnivores, and they're supposed to have a meat-based diet. In other words, if they're out in the wild, they won't seek out any type of a grain or really, like muffins or carbohydrates or potatoes, whereas dogs are what they call omnivores, and they can't eat other things. So it's really important. There's been studies, and I am by no means a veterinarian, but there are studies, and if you do your research, you can find that medical evidence has started to show that cats are getting problems with relating to obesity because of the high amount of carbohydrates in commercial pet food diets. And it's really hard to determine what is a carbohydrate or other, you know, things that will turn into sugars because these pet food labels are very difficult to determine. But if you do the research like I did, you will find that most of these pet food diets have a lot of carbohydrates break down into sugars, and that's how the cats get diabetes.
Did your cats look overweight, or were they?
Oh, I had both cats were overweight, and the veterinarians actually suggested these what they call light foods or diet foods. And that was one of the horrifying things I learned when I was doing the research, because I couldn't understand when I was giving them the light foods and the diet foods. I'd gone from giving them a cup a day or whatever it was on the bag I was supposed to give them. And some of these light and diet foods would only suggest about an eighth of a cup, which just seemed like so little food. And the cats would get very crabby and very intense, and I felt that they were starving. And what my research showed is that really what the pet food manufacturers put in there is something akin to sawdust, and it kind of pushes the food through the system so they can't absorb it as much. And that's what they call light or diet food. And it's called powdered cellulose, which they sometimes refer to as quote-unquote food rich in fiber. That's not what I would call fiber. And the amazing thing is, once I started telling people to convert cats to, you know, if you weren't going to do home cooking or feed them real meat, at least feed them wet food, virtually everyone I've told that to, their cats, including my own, have lost weight. And there is one person in the lawsuit whose cat had a diagnosed kidney condition. And since she has, you know, because cats by nature tend not to drink a lot of water, so that's, again, another reason why the wet food is very good for them, because it hydrates them, whereas the dry food dehydrates them and causes all kinds of kidney problems. The other leading cause of death among cats is feline lower urinary tract disease, and that, again, is caused by the high use of dry cat food in this country. Cornell University just came out and said that people need to beware about using dry cat food because it can cause feline lower urinary tract disease, arthritis, obesity, and all kinds of problems in cats.
Can it also cause cancer? Or what looks like cancer? What's tested as cancer? Is there any relationship between the food and cancer? Because I've suffered that loss as well.
Well, there can be. I mean, there are reports that, you know, there are additives just like in our food. Some companies still use additives like BHA, BHT, ethoxyquin. If you see those in the back of a bag, look out, because there are studies that tend to show out there that I've been told about that show that there can be a correlation or an incidence of cancer, although I'm not aware of anything that shows it without question. But you should also know that there's other things in pet food that you might not want to feed your pet. There's something called vitamin premixes that go into pet food. And what the government allows is there's something called, for example, to give you something that's very unhealthy for a cat, propylene glycol can make cats very sick. So the FDA banned it a while back. But in vitamin premixes, it can still be used. So, but what the FDA has determined that in smaller amounts it shouldn't be harmful. But the concern that I have is the apparent lack of reliable studies that shows that some of these cancer-causing agents like BHA, BHT, and ethoxyquin, or chemicals like propylene glycol, if you feed a cat the same food year after year, day in and day out, the way the manufacturers and sometimes the vets encourage, there's nothing really, no established studies showing what the impact on the cat or dog is over a period of time. And from what I understand from veterinarians I've talked to, it would depend on the relative health of the cat or dog and their genetic makeup. Some are going to be more susceptible than others.
I was feeding my cat a premium, healthy food given, bought and purchased from the vet. You couldn't purchase it in the stores, and it was very expensive. Over, I think it was over $1.25 or more a can. And then at one point, my cat couldn't digest it anymore and was constantly throwing up, at which point you're desperate because you're buying your food from the vet, you're taking the premium cat food, and they can't eat it anymore. What does that signify to you? What's going on? What are the vets buying?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've been contacted by a number of vets, and there's some really amazing vets out there. One vet I talked to, I have a lot of respect for. Her name's Dr. Elizabeth Hodgkins, and she was a veterinarian out in California, and she used to work for Hills. And she had a website where a lot of cats were ill with diabetes, where people could go and get information about that. I'm sure you can still find her website. I don't have it with me, but I can give it to you so you can tell your listeners at another time. But she feeds her cats a raw diet, and I know that's not for everybody, but that's what she really recommends. And the other vets I've talked to all say that the higher the amount of meat that you feed them, the better they're going to do because it's more similar to their natural diet.
And, of course, I was being told just the opposite.
Of course. Most people were. I was, too.
And then I moved from, after not giving hard food for all those years, I had avoided it, but when my cat could no longer digest the cat food from the vet, then I tried a premium, healthy cat food that came in a soft, what is called a soft hard food formula.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he could digest it, but of course he got sicker. Stopped throwing up, but became sicker. So in effect, there's no happy solution here unless you are able to go to perhaps the raw food. And by raw, you mean not cooked, of
right.
course.
Yeah, and there's all kinds. If you do some searches on the web, you can find all types of raw food diets out there. I know some vets who've recommended, and what I've been doing for mine is that I've gone to a pouch type of formula for the one cat who won't eat human food that I cook for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very heavy on water content, and the ingredients are pretty good. No commercial pet food is going to have great ingredients. It's all unfit for human consumption. So if you think you're feeding your cat or dog what they call real meat all the time, that's blatantly false. All of the food for cats and dogs has been deemed unfit for human consumption.
Whoa, that's,
right.
that's scary right there.
Mm-hmm. So you have to understand that right off. So what I do is I supplement any type of a commercial pet food with meat that I either cook with chicken or turkey or whatever your particular pet likes. Because if you supplement a commercial diet, that's much better than just giving them a commercial diet.
But do you cook it? You mentioned that you cook the food. So is it better raw or cooked?
My cats will not eat raw food. And
that's because they had commercial food for so long that now they can't eat raw food?
Well, I got Marlo as a baby. He's my little gray kitty, and he never wanted raw food. Maybe there's an art, and I was just not very good at trying to get him to eat it.
Okay.
But he always looked at me like I was a little nuts when I tried to give it to him. So I didn't want to push that on him because I thought, well, you know, I eat cooked food. It can't be too bad for him. So, yes, I cook chicken and turkey. But, I mean, ideally, if I could get them to eat a raw food diet, I'd love to because I've seen cats who've been on a raw food diet. And they have gorgeous coats, and they look fantastic. There's a lady I know who fed her cat a raw food diet, and the cat lived to be 24. And all of us who love our pets, would love that.
We would have loved if they could all live to 24, right?
Exactly. But I also know another lady in Canada who has written some interesting books for your readers. Her name is Ann Martin. The name of the book is Food Pets Die For. It's a pretty good book. And she had a cat that a dog that she home cooked for, and it lived to be quite, quite old. So home cooked also works.
Home cooked, by the way, meaning bland, nothing in it, no salt. Not putting any salt or spices on it, completely blend?
Yeah, well, you have to be careful because cats and dogs are a little bit different than we are, and there's things like even something as simple as garlic is not good for them and can cause problems. There are studies that go both ways whether garlic can be toxic to dogs and cats. And there's other things like chocolate and you know, a lot of simple ingredients that can be complex. And believe it or not, there are studies that show that with salt, that cats and dogs are susceptible to hypertension. So that's another thing. If you're buying food, be careful of the amount of salt that you see in it. That's why some of these quote-unquote premium foods that advertise sea salt and that, you know, they don't need that. So I would absolutely say the blander the better. I'm sorry, what?
Well, if you're buying something ready-made at the grocery from the deli, but it's ready-made, that may not be a good idea because it might have something in it. I mean, anything that they may have cooked, they may have put some spices in it without your knowledge.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I mean, but I'm ultra cautious because I want mine around forever. So, and if I don't know what's in it, I won't give it to them.
So when you were in the throes of losing your cats, you were simultaneously studying about the food at the same time?
No. I had already lost two, and I had kind of resigned myself to where, you know, diabetes, to what the vets had told me, that losing cats from diabetes after 10 or 12 years are just, that's how it happens. Because the vets had always told me that I had to feed commercial pet food. So it was when the menu foods recall started that I started looking into the food because there were so many cats and dogs who were becoming ill and it was so unclear what food you could feed. And that led me to do some research, and I got contacted by a lot of people who wanted something done at that time.
And that's how the whole case came about?
Exactly, who were far more knowledgeable than me about pet food. And I learned more than I could ever imagine about pet food. It was frightening, and I felt pretty ignorant, as a matter of fact, to be honest with you, about what I'd been feeding.
Can we compliment Maltzman Foreman for a moment for taking this on?
I'm sorry?
I'd like to compliment Maltzman Foreman for a moment for taking this on.
Oh, yeah, I do as well. My partners have been fantastic because it was definitely not an easy case to take on, and they've been fantastic.
Can you give the website and any contact information just... We'll stop for a moment and let you do that.
We have a website. It's www.mflegal.com. So anyone interested in legal representation by the firm can definitely contact us.
Lovely. Okay. Now, as you've gone forward with this, maybe we'll move to dogs for a moment. I mean, what did you learn about dogs that we might want to highlight here?
Well, I actually learned from a very knowledgeable lady that, a lot of people who feel that their dogs, I'll give you an example. A lot of people cut down the amount that their dogs eat because dogs will throw up the food, and they'll think that, well, if they eat this dry food, then they drink water, then they throw up. What they're really not seeing is that this food can irritate the digestive tracts of a lot of dogs. You know, the food can look really cute if it's got cute colors and in cute shapes, but the colors, those really bright colors that they use are really not very healthy for a dog's digestion, and they can often give dogs allergies. They can give dogs gastric reflux, just like humans get. And it can cause itching, rashes. People have reported, if they'll touch their dog, the dog will be hot to the touch. Bloating is big. That's what they'll bloat up from gas or other things that are caused by some of the things in this food.
So, in other words, the color of the food could be a real red light.
Right. I would try to stick to something that looks a little more normal, and I would look for, as little as of that coloring as possible.
What has been the reaction, to the extent that you can talk about it, and if you can't, just say so, but after all, there's a number of companies involved here, and I'm not talking with, I don't really need the names of the companies involved in the case, but overall, what's been the reaction by such companies? Do they defend what they're doing? Do they fight it?
I can't talk about the lawsuit.
Okay, but not the lawsuit. Is there any way you can talk about your overall impressions of the industry or anything like that?
Overall, as your average consumer, I can, yes.
Okay.
I've noticed that when I first started the lawsuit, you used to go into Petco, and there'd be all kinds of representations that that if you fed your cat or dog food, that it'd jump higher, see better, almost made it seem as if the dog would be Superman if it ate a particular brand of dog food. And there were many things hanging from the rafters, and the store was just littered with representations. It was shocking. And I have to say, I travel a lot, and I do go into pet stores across the country, and that has changed. I think the advertising has gotten better. I think the companies are being more responsible now. Not completely, of course, but, you know, compared to when prior to the lawsuit, it was, really almost out of control. So I think that has changed and it's become better. The thing that is of concern is that the amount of reports of problems with pet food continue.
Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. There was an incident, forgive me, but I don't remember exactly when, but it was in the Midwest, and I think in California, where I believe it was, I won't say the name of the company, but one of the major pet specialty stores stored some food, and apparently there was vermin and problems with it. And fortunately, it was found out, and they recalled some of the bags for that. So I think it could be anything like it was with that, to storage problems, to there is product that comes from rendering companies in this food, and what you mentioned at the beginning. When you go to the store and you see, for example, hamburger meat that's at the store, and when it's past its prime and it's not sold, the grocery store has to get rid of it somehow. Well, I never thought about it before this lawsuit. Where does it go? It goes to what they call a rendering company, just like rancid restaurant grease. They have to clean it once in a while. Where does it go? A company will come up and pick it up and take it to a rendering company. And it's stuff like that that ends up in the pet food, and that's why commercial pet food contains a lot of things that are not necessarily what you would consider to be good for your cat or dog.
I think that you really educated me on this one when we talked leading up to this show, this whole issue of the rendering companies and how they work and what they do. Can you talk more about that?
Sure. It's like I was just saying a moment ago. It's the garbage in our life that could be considered in some odd way consumable, that they want to put into feed, animal feed, really. It's also what livestock get. So it'd be anything from downed cows that are out in the pasture for a few days. They'll be taken to a rendering company. Like I said, supermarket meat or other produce that is past its prime. And unfortunately, they're not going to take it out of the styrofoam wrapper. Or it could be even, I've been told by somebody who used to work for a rendering company that it would also be roadkill, or even zoo animals. And there's also, someone told me they worked for a research facility where they also got rid of research animals that had passed away. So all of this has to end up somewhere, because if you took all of this type of thing or the carcasses. I'll give you another good example. When you take away all of the food that has been deemed fit for human consumption from a cow, that leaves very little left. Basically, it leaves the anus and that cavity, the bones and the hooves and that type of thing, and they have to get rid of it somehow. So all that ends up at a rendering facility with down cows and ill cows. It gets ground down, cooked down, and the fats are separated from this other more solid material. And the fats eventually go to get sprayed on the outside, what they call animal digest, sprayed on the outside of this food, which makes it somewhat palatable, because the stuff that has been ground down and pumped down into pet food is usually a nasty gray or other colors that are not in those cute colors you see at the supermarket. And that is a huge part of what they put in pet food. That's what they call byproducts and meals and that kind of thing.
I'm just shocked here. My mouth is open because it's so horrifying to think of what we've been feeding our pets. And the, in my case, and perhaps in yours, the amount of fear that we had that if we gave them human food, we might hurt them, whereas what we've been giving them is absolutely horrifying.
It really is. Because then if you consider, it's not just the rendered product, it's like, if you think of it, like let's say you even took a human-grade USDA steak and cooked it for 2 hours at 250 degrees. That steak wouldn't be very edible or even what they call bioavailable, meaning you couldn't really digest it and get any nutrients out of it. Well, that's what happens at the rendering plant. And then once it goes to the pet food factory, they take this stuff that has been deemed inedible, the stuff that has been pummeled down, and then they, add it with other ingredients. They pump it full of vitamins because there's no nutrients left in it. And then they cook it again and puff it up into these cute little shapes for another long period of time under slow heating. So by the time you get it in a dry food, try to think there's not much left in it. A friend of mine likens it to, crackers or cookies infused with vitamins. And if you think about it, a human could live on crackers infused with vitamins, but you wouldn't do very well.
Would this include, let's say, these so-called healthy and softer, quote-unquote hard foods? Some of the hard food is very soft.
There's your typical dry food, then there's a semi-moist food, and then there's wet food. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean?
Well, yeah, snacks and treats, they tend to be moist.
Exactly.
Soft, even though you would call them... You would tend to refer to them as hard, but they're soft.
Right. Those semi-moist foods are among the worst from the research I've done.
Okay.
Because they contain things that are really not healthy for either a cat or a dog. Or I'll give you another example of a treat that was deemed a few years ago not very good for dogs. There was a particular treat that when the dogs chewed it, it was actually, there were reports that it was piercing their esophagus because it was so hard when they tried to swallow it, it would pierce the esophagus. And so you really need to be careful of what you give them. And most of the treats, from what I've seen, when you read the back of the label and you go actually physically look up what is comprised of those treats, you don't want to give those dogs treats. Cook your dog some bacon. is my advice, and give them some bacon or something like that, or whatever you're eating. I mean, dogs, it's so much easier if you have a dog than if you have a cat, because dogs can really eat whatever you eat. And most of the people I know who have dogs who have read about what's in dog food feed them table scraps, and, you know, dogs do very, very well that way.
Does that include things like salad or only meats or what? I mean, what can they eat? What can a dog eat?
Well, the breeds like different things, but for example, I've got a friend who's got a dog who feeds the dog salmon, potatoes, carrots, what the dog likes to eat. I mean, you can feed a dog many, many things, and it also depends on the dog's individual taste, but, anything from a hamburger that you're making to, I have another friend who loves to make their dog kind of like a hamburger, they make them eggs, they love bacon for treats. It'd be hard to get anything better for them.
How do you know how much is enough human food for a dog or cat? Because, of course, if it comes in a can, you know that that's how much he's supposed to get. But what if you're cooking it? Where's the end?
I'm so glad that you asked that. You know, the really amazing thing, what I've heard from people, and I wondered that myself when I first started doing that in 2007, I had a cat that was very overweight and was already headed towards kidney failure and diabetes. And you know the amazing thing? Once you start feeding, I had her on that crazed veterinary diet where they were essentially eating air and that fiber that is really like sawdust. And once I put my overweight cat on a human food diet, it took a long time, but they stopped overeating because they're actually getting nutrients. And she's now down to 7 pounds. And has never overeaten. They know when to stop. I just put, and then when you see how much they eat, then you can start regulating it. As a matter of fact, I've asked dog people the same thing, And they say that, you know, the dogs don't overeat because they actually get satiated.
That's amazing.
It really is, you know, because I know people whose dogs have been morbidly obese, and then they start eating, like another friend of mine started feeding their dog salmon and potatoes, and you'd think the dog would overeat because the food can be rich sometimes. And no, the dog gets satisfied and stops.
Huh. What about the same thing every day? Do you have to have an enormous variety if you're giving them human food?
Well, not an enormous variety, but it, like anything else, even if you do decide to stick with commercial food, it's really important. One thing that everybody learned during one of the many things we learned during the menu foods recall, it's really important to switch the foods, because if you give a dog or a cat the same food every day, if you ate potatoes every day of your life, you wouldn't be very healthy. And, you know, it's good to switch it up. And the same thing with human food. If you decide to give them that, you know, just give them different things every day. And there's all kinds of great books. There's wonderful things on the web about if you want to cook for them. Although, like I said, with dogs, you can pretty much give them whatever you're eating. And with cats, there's wonderful recipes out there if you want to try cooking for them.
What we need is a delivery system. Somebody will deliver, like pizza. They'll deliver your cat food and your dog food to go, right?
I couldn't agree more.
7 days a week of supply of food.
Exactly.
Well, most of us can barely get ourselves fed, so it would certainly relieve the burden of it, and make for much happier and healthier animal.
I agree.
What do you see in terms of public reaction to all of this? Do you feel that people are really taking it seriously, or more or less it comes into consciousness and then it leaves just as quickly?
Well, I think the menu foods recall, I think, woke a lot of people up. And I think, unfortunately, there's still many, 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 many more out there who don't know what they're feeding to their pets and how damaging it can be. So I encourage anyone, you know, if you're interested in that, the research is out there. It's not hard. It's just time-consuming because the labels on the back of food are very difficult to figure out. But if you have access to the Internet and want to look those things up, you can. And, you know, it's really the best thing you can do for your cat or dog. But unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who don't know still.
Right. And I hope that this show will help at least get the word out, be one of many, but certainly we're trying to do our part. We actually published a book called Supernatural Vitality. People thought we were referring to something from outer space, but we weren't. With Supernatural Vitality for Your Pet and Yourself was the first book that we published in this arena. And I hope that they'll visit starpublications.com and take a look at that. It's an e-book with an audio that goes with it, because from the get-go and the outset of what we're trying to do with Rights Radio, I took this issue very seriously. And I feel that anything we can do to deliver more information about how to keep your pet safe and secure and healthy is so critical, especially their digestive health, of course.
Right.
And I think from what you're saying, it may be the source of many diseases and many more than we anticipate or even might consider. For example, as you said, there could be a connection to cancer. Well, when you're told that your pet has cancer, you're in a state of complete and utter shock. And they will give drugs like they would to humans, but they give you a prognosis of 6 months to perhaps a year, and that's it. You're just buying time. And it's a very, very expensive regime, and there's no way out. And you discovered that there might be a way back from diabetes. I'm not sure there's a way back from most forms of cancers in animals, and yet, if the cause could potentially, in some cases, be linked to diet, imagine how much suffering could be avoided.
I agree. Well, think about it. If there are studies establishing a link to cancer and diet with humans, as we both know there are, I would imagine the same would be with pets. I don't think that's a stretch.
I want to stand up against cancer in pets. And we're going to add diabetes to that as well, because I've learned from you now in this show that this is a number one problem for pets, and I don't think that most people are aware of that.
I don't think so either, and it's really, really crucial for cats, too, and there's so many people out there who love their cats, and unfortunately so many people who don't know that every time they give them a bag of dry food, they're getting them that much closer to diabetes, arthritis, kidney failure.
In your experience, are these number one, two, and three, or is there no particular order of the worst incidents?
Well, they're all big. Feline lower urinary tract disease is a big killer of cats. So is obesity, and so is diabetes, and they're all related. If I could give you one, two, three, I can't read off the top of my head, but they're all right up there.
All right. Let's talk a bit about what goes into the overall human food supply and our water, etc., because of course when you throw out these cans and you throw out the food, what happens with it all?
That I don't know. You mean as far as where it goes in the garbage?
Well, I think we touched on that in some of our conversations about the pollution of the human food supply, and that a lot of this is getting into the human food supply as well.
Oh, I see your question. Yeah, that's what I was getting to when I said that rendering. I think most people don't realize that this is not just a pet food issue. I'll give you an example. During the melamine scare, they decided not to use some of the pet food. So how did melamine end up in being ingested by pigs that were destined to be slaughtered? Well, because somebody, presumably, I read from an FDA report, I believe it was, picked up pet food, returned it to probably a rendering company. It got rendered and sent out for feed, because there's pet food, but there's also animal feed. I don't know if you know it, but, you know, currently there is a difference, because bovine spongiform encephalopathy, which is called mad cow disease, or BSE, is allowed in pet food, but it's not allowed in the human food chain. And most people don't know that the pet food that they might be feeding to their cats might cause mad cow disease in cats. Dogs, I've read, are less susceptible to it. But think about it. If pet food was rendered and, you know, the pigs got melamine from pet food that had been rendered, that's something that is going to be consumed by the human public, and eventually through eating the pigs who ate the melamine. And that's how the human food chain can get contaminated.
Right. So what you're saying, and this is, again, staggering and staggeringly important, is that pet food that goes bad, or even perhaps pet food that isn't entirely bad or not bad at all, might get re-rendered into feed?
Well, there was that example of it. I don't know if that's typically done, because, you know, the rendering industry is very secretive. It's not like they have published reports of what's rendered and that kind of thing. And from what I understand, and I've spoken to someone who used to work at a rendering company, the deal with the rendering companies is pretty much what comes that day, and it's never anything very consistent. You know, it could be cats and dogs that have been euthanized. I saw a video report out of St. Louis where they were showing euthanized cats and dogs going to one rendering company. A reporter had written about that extensively in the Baltimore Sun. And or it could be, you know, some other type of thing. Like I said, the supermarket meat. It could be roadkill. It could be, you know, you name it, whatever it ends, people end up there.
How did this happen? How did these companies come into being? How are they allowed to be, to function, because it's so dangerous?
Well, I mean, there's nothing dangerous per se about rendering companies. They provide a benefit. For example, there's a lot of biodiesel fuel that's made from rendered meat, and, you know, to a certain degree, the soap that you use, glycerin comes from that. So there's a lot of products that come from rendering. That's why it's really good to do research on this. And, you know, because if you thought about it, there's no way we could bury all this garbage. So it does, you know, serve a good purpose. I don't think the good purpose is in pet food or in animal feed, because I think it's dangerous, or at least potentially dangerous, to have some of these things in the human, definitely in the human supply chain. And, you know, I definitely don't want to feed any of that type of thing to my cats, and I know most loving pet owners don't want to either.
So the euthanized dogs and cats are coming perhaps from animal shelters. They euthanize and they send to the rendering company. Is that automatic?
Well, I know that Los Angeles County, I read a statistic, and I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but when these published reports first started coming out about euthanized cats and dogs being taken to rendering companies and ending up in pet food, people got upset. So now what Los Angeles is saying, oh, well, it's not going into pet food, but it is going to our rendering company. Well, then it could be made, you know, cats and dogs who've been euthanized are could potentially be an animal feed then, or they could be biodiesel fuel, but they're saying it's not in pet food. There have been other reports where, for instance, the reporter who investigated in Baltimore Sun said, you know, he interviewed the people from the rendering company, and they had a contract with one of the major pet food manufacturers, and they said, yeah, we have an agreement. We're not supposed to let it get in the pet food, but, you know, some of it's going to get by maybe 1 or 2% anyway.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But you see, with euthanization, of course, they can, there's other ways to get rid of the animal without going into descriptions here, but certainly they don't have to send them to a rendering company.
No, they don't. But, you know, and I don't know what the deal is with that. You know, sometimes rendering company used to pay for it, but now I think that, you know, I'd read accounts where sometimes rendering companies would pay to pick things up, but I don't think they do that anymore. So I don't really know what the incentive is with that. But there was another account of a animal shelter in North Florida where they were euthanizing quite a few cats and dogs, and people would take it to the rendering company. And I read an account of one of the animal shelter workers saying that they couldn't stand the sounds from the rendering company, which I won't go into because it was horrifying enough.
Talking about the sounds at the rendering company?
Yes. Well,
you mean the rendering company did the euthanization?
No, no, no. It was just the when they would drop off the dead cats and dogs, it was just, you know, the crunching of bones. Just,
oh, God.
Yeah. And that type of thing just horrified the worker. So when that got reported, I believe it was locally, they started using other methods to dispose of that. And I there are plenty of animals. It's not every animal shelter that does that. They do.
But I mean, to be very specific, and I hate to use the word, but after all, animals could be graciously, in this case, cremated, and then there's no problem of that poor pet soul going back into food or feed or anything else. The ashes can be sprinkled on a pet cemetery in some positive way, put in, you know, blessed, as you might say. So why do they have to do this? Why can't they cremate the animals?
Well, the argument is that with the volume, and there's just millions upon millions of cats and dogs that are euthanized every year. That's why, you know, if someone's feeding strays out there, you know, the kindest thing you could do would be, if you can't do it, you know, call an animal rescue place, because, you know, I know that the animal rescue organizations I've worked with, they're all trying to spay and neuter them, because it really is an epidemic problem, and it's very cruel. I know a lot of people don't like to neuter males, or, you know, but it's really important, because there's a lot of animals out there who are suffering. And, you know, if you go to the animal shelters, like Broward County Animal Shelter, you know, it was just written up not too long ago that they were, you know, not taking very good care of some of the animals up there. And if you've ever been up there, they live in heartbreaking conditions. So the kindest thing you could do so that none of this would happen is to make sure your cat and dog is neutered. And if they go outside, you know, please do that. Because these animal shelters argue that they send them to rendering companies because if you... It costs a lot of money to cremate them.
Uh-huh.
And if you've ever paid, like I have, unfortunately, to cremate a cat, it is pricey.
Yes, I remember. It's quite pricey.
Right, but worth it for me. especially after I read that, you know, my first cat, who I loved, I didn't know any better, and no vet back then asked me if I wanted a cat cremated, and I just certainly hope she didn't end up in a rendering company.
Ah, so you don't really know what happened to that first cat?
No, believe me, I've had, ever since I read about that, I've had many a nightmare about that.
Right. I think this, what you're revealing here is so important to understand, because the heartbreak is, of course, if you call an animal shelter to pick up that stray cat or dog, typically that's the end of the cat or dog. That's the problem. We had a wonderful woman on the show. We did a whole show devoted to stray cats and dogs and feral cats, of course. And it is an epidemic, and there's people like this woman who are doing it one by one, taking them in personally, standing there, making sure that they're taken care of, and taking them back out again so that they're not going to be disposed of.
Yeah, there's just an army of people out there doing wonderful work in that regard. I'm really impressed, I have to say. I've seen some of the groups in Florida, and some of them in Michigan and other states, Illinois, one group in California I saw. Just really impressed by what a lot of different people are doing in that regard. And you know, anybody who can save a cat or a dog from going to a public animal shelter, you're definitely saving them from almost certain death.
Oh, so sad, isn't it?
It really is.
What are some of the good signs that you're seeing in front of you now? Any uplifting messages we have as we're closing in? We've got about 5 more minutes.
I'm seeing that among the people who are trying to learn that, you know, that they are having great results with their cats. I mean, the most uplifting thing I have seen is, you know, the lady whose cat was near kidney failure and eating all of the vet food. Now the cat is fine. She put the cat on wet food, and she's doing really, really well. The good news is, you know, people like me who have cats where you put them on wet food, they've lost the weight. They're, you know, running around like kittens again. And, you know, that is the uplifting part. Or like my friend who has a Shiba Inu, one of my favorite kind of dogs, who feeds the dog salmon, steak, and everything he eats. And the Shiba is jumping higher, playing great. Another lady who came to me and told me that her dog had hot spots, and it actually had a huge bulb patch on it. It was a gorgeous, gorgeous lab. And she's now put it on human food. It eats everything she eats. When she gets takeout, the dog eats Chinese.
No.
And the dog is doing better than ever.
Chinese food?
Uh-huh.
But now, wouldn't that be a bit of a contradiction with the salt and MSG or whatever else is in Chinese food?
Well, I think it depends. I mean, she's pretty good eater, and they have sometimes just some steamed vegetables, which is the type of thing with white rice. That's
mm-hmm.
fine for a dog.
Are you seeing any differences between states, one state versus another, being better or more enlightened or less enlightened?
Not really. No, not state-wise, but I haven't really thought of it that way. It's more like the level of interest in people. I think people are, after the menu foods recall, much more motivated to try to do the best for their pets and more aware that, you know, maybe what I'm told isn't the best thing.
Can you just give us a one-minute summary of that recall, what it was all about?
Yeah, in early 2007, I think it was actually March 2007, it was the largest recall of pet food in history, where Menu Foods, which is a co-packer of food, it makes pet food for a lot of different manufacturers. It was later found to be laced with melamine and cyanuric acid, which combined in a way that made it deadly for cats and dogs, or made them very, very ill by attacking their kidneys.
What happened to them?
They either died or became very ill.
But what happened to the company?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
But what happened? There was obviously a reaction. We remember the recall, but what was the?
Well, actually, interestingly enough, they traced some of the components, which, without going into detail, back to China. And there's been some indictments, and there, out of a group of lawsuits, there's been a settlement that is known as the Menu Food Settlement, and there's a website on that you can find on the web pretty easily. So they have settled that for about, I think it's either $24 or $25 million.
That's a pretty quick settlement.
Yeah, it was never in litigation, and they basically went into settlement terms, and after 9 months emerged with the settlement.
Whoa. And are we sure that they're not doing what they were doing? Are we absolutely, can we be confident about that? Or is this,
well, I will leave that to you to look at the terms of the Menu Food Settlement. I can only speak for myself that I was shocked and appalled at the terms in the settlement suit.
So you felt, as a normal citizen, not an attorney here, but as a citizen, that this was too fast, and it should have gone to trial?
I think that if it was going to settle, it should have at least been on much better terms. I mean, as far as the testing or anything to prevent this from happening in the future is just absolutely irrelevant in the lawsuit. There's no checks, no balances, and that's very difficult for people to even recover under it. And knowing a number of people who have really, really suffered tremendous losses in that recall, I just think it's a shame.
It is a shame. It's a very sad story, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this Menu Foods is a co-packer for a number of companies, but not for all.
Not for all of them.
Okay. That brings me maybe to what might be a final point as we wrap up here. We have just about 2 more minutes, but I'd like to ask you, right now we see an explosion of so-called healthy food being sold as green, literally green food for pets and cats and dogs. Should we be no less suspect of the new food that suddenly came on the market? How should we respond to it all?
Well, pet food manufacturers are constantly doing marketing surveys to try to find out what will appeal most to pet food buyers. Right now, green things are very hot, and so they're going to start labeling everything they've got as green. But if you look at the ingredients and compare them, just like if you did with premium or other ones, they're all basically the same. They all have some very unhealthy ingredients, and, you know. So I would be careful. I would look for colors, like if things are pretty extremely bright yellows and reds, that's really not healthy for your cat or dog. And it doesn't really matter if they look like bow ties or, you know, what's really important is that your cat or dog eats something healthy. So that's what I would look into. Do your research and get what's best for them for food, not necessarily what is the hottest marketing trend.
Well, that's really excellent advice. And I want to thank you, Catherine, for being with us today and for taking time for your from your extremely busy schedule. I know that you're pushing papers on those cases every day and filing, and sometimes you don't even get enough sleep. I'd say that's correct, wouldn't you?
Yes.
And can you please just give any contact details one more time?
Yeah, if you want to reach me, I can be reached at www.mflegal.com.
Okay. And this is Dr. Joyce Starr. And I'm so glad that you were with us today to hear our program on pet food. And I hope that you'll join us for our next show, or you'll visit my website at rightsradio.com and starpublications.com to learn about our books on home and hearth, homeowner rights, pet owner rights, and so much more. And thank you for being with us today. And thank you, Catherine McIver, and again, Dr. Joyce Starr from rightsradio.com.